Today's program is brought to you by Tabard Inn, new American cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and it's the first day of March. And although it is snow flurrying outside right now in Brooklyn, at least, tomato mania is right around the corner. I'm talking about general tomato enthusiasm, but also the world's largest tomato seedling sale of the same name, Tomato Mania, is taking place pretty soon, and I'm excited to have the founder of that seedling sale and also the new author of Tomato Mania, the book, A Fresh Approach to Celebrating Tomatoes in the Garden and in the Kitchen. It's Scott Daigh. How are you?
Hi, Kathy. Good morning.
Morning. So
We're great out here. I'm sorry it's still so cool for you. I know that's difficult when spring's around the corner.
It's tough to like get in that mood, but I know it's a good time to start getting your seed, your garden plans in motion.
Of course, we all have. I mean, all our different seasons. You know, everybody in the South should be in the ground by now. But look at the weather they're getting. So
yeah.
at least you guys, you know, at least you're not suffering through that, right? They should be there. But oh my gosh, look at the temperature. So it's good. We're starting our season this week out here.
All right. Yeah, it might be a slow start, but that means all the more time to plan things right. So I'm really excited about this book. I think that it's such a fun guide, a practical guide to gardening tomatoes.
Thank you.
Yeah, but also I was kind of joking. I was flipping through it with a few friends who were watching, and I sort of jokingly referred to this book as tomato porn because of all the gorgeous photos throughout.
Thank you. Hey, we like that. That's not a bad thing, right?
Yeah.
So it is, especially in the wintertime. I mean, come on. You know, when you can't go outside, it's fine, Dad. It's great to be able to look at a book. So thank you. We appreciate it.
I mean,
that.
We were really like drooling over it, like, ooh, ah. But it's something about, it's true, like something about tomatoes seemed to inspire this lust that is really unabashed. And I think it's ripe for exploring more, so to speak.
Well, it is. And, you know, at our events every year, we obviously cater to really great gardeners who garden and do things all year long. But I'm always amazed by the people who grow only one thing in a given year, and it's tomatoes, or
right.
You know, a tomato, or something. That's it. So again, we get everybody from all over the spectrum. But yeah, tomatoes are a huge sort of springboard for the spring garden and for people in the in the growing season.
It's like a gateway drug to gardening, it seems.
Lots of people refer to it as that, and it is, because you know the other thing is, while you have to get the basics right, it's not a wimp. You know, it's easy to be successful with these things. And, you know, we call the book a reality gardening book because I try not to pull any punches. Like, look, you'll have good years and bad years. But, you know, you'll accomplish this and maybe you'll have a test with that. But bottom line, they're not wimps and it's not difficult. So we hope everybody tries it.
Right. And this is something that has been going on forever. I mean, tomatoes have been long a favorite home gardening project. I mean, my grandfather had tomatoes and took a lot of pride in them. It sounds like your dad did as well.
My whole family. Tomatoes, you know, we talk about heirloom tomatoes, but I think the process and the experience of growing tomatoes is also sort of an heirloom. We do get it from our forebears, and, you know, we were all farmers way back when.
Right.
So, yes, my grandfather for sure. So when I was five, I decided, ooh, I have to have a garden just like Papa, and that was the beginning.
And it's interesting to note, like, how tomatoes have changed in fashion. So before, I guess for the last 100 years or so, the fashionable tomato was a bright red, perfectly round tomato. I guess, however, like, meanwhile, a curious breed of gardeners were saving seeds for crazy-looking tomatoes as well, which we now call heirloom.
We doubt Paul Ehrlich. Exactly. Those were the first tomato maniacs, right? They were out there going, wow, red's not good enough. And, you know, whether they had a friend who had a green one or a bicolor one or a black one or whatever it was, that is the first sort of departure. And it was important because obviously we got so many out there.
And it is really interesting to note that they still did this because with so many crops, industrial agriculture has certainly focused on one type of crop for shelf stableness and for other attributes.
Yes.
Maybe they're easier to grow, they're more resistant, they're more hardy, and so forth. And some of these heirloom tomatoes were not so much. They're more tricky.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, they are, and they don't hold up. I mean, they flat don't ship well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you've been gardening for the last, let's even be 20, 30 years, maybe, you know, and lots of people have, you've seen a major shift from that, what you're talking about, that perfectly red, round, here's what you have to grow in the garden, folks, to the heirloom craze sort of inserts all this wonderful new color, wonderful shapes, and obviously taste again.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're watching, you know, you can go to the store and, oh, there's an orange tomato and a lobed tomato and a whatever. So, you know, supply and demand. We demanded it, started growing it, and guess who followed? So we're lucky these days that we have not only the heirlooms, but we have hybridizers now paying attention to, thank you, taste again, and also color and size and, you know, uniqueness. And we're the beneficiaries.
And that's so interesting because with all the garden crops that have been sort of really, whittled down to one variety, I don't see that many, you know, different crazy looking vegetables for, say, I don't know, eggplant. We've been seeing some varieties, but not quite as many as tomatoes. But you bring up a really great point, which is when I was flipping through this, I didn't realize that a lot of these interesting varieties like Green Zebra were more recent hybridizations.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So
we get kind of both worlds with that. We get an old world feel, mm-hmm. right? But in truth, it's an open pollinated variety, so it performs like an heirloom.
Right.
But you kind of get a little bit more modern sort of hopefully maybe some disease resistance, maybe some modern considerations along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, you have new and you have old, and it's kind of wonderful.
And what exactly is an heirloom then, by definition? Because it seems to be like this catch-all now for any tomato that doesn't look red and round and perfect.
Well, no, you're right. You're right, and a lot of people, you know, a lot of people buy that, and that's fine. In most cases, it's sort of harmless if you label something that, and in truth, it's not. If it's good, it's an heirloom. I mean, okay, that's winning.
Right.
But at the same time, the definition is literal, and mm-hmm. an heirloom variety is true from seed. That means I grow it this year if I'm growing a black crème tomato or Missouri pink love apple tomato. If
Ooh.
I save a seed correctly and I plant it next year, I'm going to get the same tomato. Now, that seems simple and like that should work all the time, except, you know, I talk about if you go back to fifth grade science and hybrids, mm-hmm. and if you save a hybrid seed, like Sun Gold, for example, Sun Gold's so delicious everybody wants to call it an heirloom.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It's the world's mm-hmm. favorite tomato, but it's a hybrid. And if you plant a Sun Gold seed, science tells us that you have about a 33% shot of actually getting a Sun Gold fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, that first generation, that first cross, will revert back to a parent or a grandparent or somewhere back.
What
in
are the parents of
so
Sun Gold? Is one of them like a cherry tomato? What are the parents here?
Is White Owl who's the parents of Sun Gold?
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever heard that. I don't know that they want to talk about that, frankly. So you never know. I mean, that's what a trade secret that is.
Wow.
And it kind of makes my brain explode when I think of the science of sort of getting so many hybrid seeds. However, the bottom line is heirlooms are true from seed, hybrids are not.
Okay.
There are other definitions of heirlooms that get more specific, family heirlooms, commercial heirlooms, etc. But in general, that's the difference.
I had a book on a few months ago about apples, and my brain exploded trying to understand all the grafting science that goes on there. So
yeah, we don't have to worry about the science of it as long as we can cook really, really great things with it, right?
Right.
So it's wonderful to have them, and again, it is a little bit of heritage, and people traveled around the world with these heirlooms, and that's mm-hmm. why we have them all over the place. And you know, with the internet, we found we found heirlooms that families and individuals had been growing for years that were never, ever available before to most gardeners, most growers. So it's pretty phenomenal.
It is. And I really enjoyed this profile you wrote about Brad Gates, a Northern California hybridizer.
Isn't that stuff great?
Yeah, I mean,
well,
I'm sorry, I'm running over you there. No.
He's sort of the new excitement in the tomato world. Now there are great hybridizers all over the place. Don't get me wrong, and I hope a couple of you guys are tuned in today. Brad seems to be leading the pack in many ways, and on the West Coast.
Okay.
And he's getting stripes, and now the blues, I think, which you probably know, and that kind of stuff.
So it sounds like he's single-handedly responsible for creating a lot of these newer species that are really getting everyone's excitement at the farmer's market and amongst chefs.
A blue tomato is kind of exciting, right? I mean, if you can grab that. Now, the blue gene, I think, was isolated at Oregon State. So there are other hybridizers working with the blue gene and breeding it, you know, into lines. So there are a lot of people doing it, and I love that.
Right.
And I don't know if your listeners know, or the blue gene is tied to anthocyanins and is the same wonderful ingredient that makes blueberries so helpful and good for you. So blue tomatoes, that is, you know, with a blue flush or blue shoulders, carry the anthocyanin gene, and visually it's exciting, but it also is really better for you. So that's kind of exciting. And Brad's doing a great job, again, along with a wonderful group of hybridizers in different places.
That is so cool. I don't know if I've seen a bluish-tinted tomato, unless it's more like purplish, like the black crim, I think, is a little bluish-purple. Is that the
blue
gene?
Well, all the black tomatoes are crazy. And that, I think, really, you know, when we look back in what's happened in the last 25 years, the black tomatoes, I think, were sort of the accelerator for the whole heirloom movement. Most of them are Russian, so they're by definition, they're exotic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they have a whole different taste profile. So when we saw the black tomatoes come, those were the ones that led the charge in terms of, oh my gosh, I have to have more and different. Mm. And they're not really blue, though. The blue, when you see a blue tomato, when you see one of these antho things, it is blue. I mean, it's crazy
really?
Good.
Whoa.
And yeah, it's kind of amazing. I don't know if you, Indigo Rose? That was the first of this batch that really sort of hit commercially. And it's just flat blue. There it is. Sort of a large cherry, but it's blue. It looks like an eggplant color, so blue purple. I guess your purist might have a problem with that, but it is that color.
Wow! And there's also a Cherokee purple. Is that among the blue family?
Oh, Cherokee purple is amazing. Cherokee purple is generally lumped in with the blacks, and that's an American name. And it is the standard bearer of taste for many people, and so it's one we've had around for a while, which is terrific. And this whole blue generation is all new. And when you put one next to the other, you know, and I'm thinking of them now, you could very well say, hey, oh, sure, that's similar and all that. But you put one next to the other, and there is, it's blue. There's no mistaking blue versus chocolatey or black. So it's pretty amazing.
Well, I hope some East Coast farmers get their hands on this book or head over to one of your seedling sales.
I hope they will too. Well, the seeds are out there, and we have good growers and really inventive nursery people and great farmers market people as well, experimenting with these varieties. So no doubt you'll see them soon. That's for sure.
Nice. So tell me about this variety that is called Michael Pollan. I think that was also invented
That's another of Brad's. Yes.
Okay.
You know, tomatoes come around in a variety of ways. I mean, that is a new variety. Oftentimes you make a cross. It's a purposeful cross. And we sell some of those at our sales. We sell Tomato Mania events. We have a variety we call Grab Bag because it is a first cross and you don't know what you're going to get.
Oh, wow.
So
fun.
Brad, in fact, has provided us with that seed. And it's a wonderful experiment in the garden. Sometimes you get something you like. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you get a rock. You know, like Charlie Brown. But
a rock?
Oftentimes you get really great stuff. No, I feel like Charlie Brown. Remember in the Halloween show?
Oh.
Sometimes you get something you don't want.
Okay.
But bottom line, Michael Pollan is the sport of green zebra. That's a different way of getting a new variety or obtaining or creating a new variety. It was he found a pear-shaped
green zebra
on a green zebra plant.
Oh.
So he saved that fruit, saved the seed, grew it out, selected for that shape, and over a few generations, which is generally 7 to 9 in the tomato world, you can be pretty much sure that that seed will be stable.
Right.
So that's how mycopollen happens. So it's essentially green zebra in a really, really amazing and different package.
So did mycopollen grow these too, or why is it named after Mr. Pollen?
Well, Brad decided to. I mean, he opts, or one opts for a catchy name, obviously, for a new variety to make it both interesting and hopefully commercially successful. That's what everybody does when they introduce anything. He did that, I'm sure, with Michael Pollan's, with Michael Pollan's okay, and just thought it was interesting and kind of a cool way to introduce it.
That's a pretty cool homage to the writer, and what an honor.
It is pretty cool, I got to say. We have lots of roses named after people, not so much tomatoes. And I'm sure it's quite an honor for him. I hope so, anyway.
Well, I hope some farmers are out there thinking that the Kathy Irway might be a catchy name in the future.
That's exactly right. You never know. You never know.
All right. Well, we're just going to cut to a quick little musical interlude and we'll be right back. You are listening to Intrigue by Obey City. This is Eat Your Words on heritageradionetwork.org.
The following program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential small hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
Hello, this is Mark Ladner from Del Posto, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Hey, we're back chatting more with Scott Daig, the author of Tomato Mania, a fresh approach to celebrating tomatoes in the garden and in the kitchen. Scott, tell me a little bit about the festival that's coming up, the Tomato Manias, that is.
My crazy event? Well, Tomato Mania started in Southern California way back in the 1900s. It was the early 90s.
Okay.
And at a wonderful nursery in Pasadena called Hortus, created a space where people could come and get these small seedlings that nobody had ever heard of.
Right.
Nobody grew them out. And it became huge. Bottom line, it just was amazing and became the biggest weekend of the year at the nursery. The nursery closed in 2000. I worked there and helped build the event for many years. And when the nursery closed, I said, this can't go away. And we tried our first event outside of the nursery, and it worked. So this year we have 16, 17 events. We show up, and basically we're a nursery pop-up.
We visit
arboretums. I've been to a friend's party store out front before. we go to great garden destinations. Our big one is at a farm stand, Tapia Brothers Farm Stand in Encino in Los Angeles. So we show up and we promote and showcase as many as 300 varieties in our biggest sale. And I have a great group of people who back me up on this and talk tomatoes all day long. And of course, we're selling steaks and containers and T-shirts and everything else that have to do with growing tomatoes.
And now the book, right?
Have a great season.
And now you get to sell the book there too, maybe.
Well, now we have a book, exactly. The book, one of our biggest things at our sales, obviously, is education.
Mm-hmm.
And how can we make you successful? Let me get you all the info. And we learn as much from people as we dispense, I think, sometimes. But the book is out there and basically, combines all the information and hopefully the know-how that we've gained through all these years. So it celebrates tomatoes. It talks about the event. It talks about the basics, obviously, and hopefully we'll make for a good tomato season.
And I love that the book talks about all the varieties, too, and how to care for those.
Well, we mentioned varieties throughout.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want this to be a dictionary, so we tried to put a lot of information in there versus just descriptions and that. We have a Tomato Mania app that's soon going to have 600 varieties on it. So we try to do the variety thing in our app. But
cool.
In the book, we really tried to mention varieties mm-hmm. for a specific use, whether it's for a recipe or for it's for a particular strategy. We talk a lot in the book about a tomato strategy, which kind of blows people's minds a little bit. But it's all about, a good gardener or a good garden gets you what you want. So if you start the season with goals and you have a strategy in mind, like I want all early tomatoes or I want all huge tomatoes or I want all orange tomatoes, mm-hmm. if you do a little homework at the beginning of the season, you can do that. And Tomato Mania events try to offer you all of those things so everybody's sort of strategy or dream tomato garden can come true.
That sounds just like a whole lot of fun. I would love this idea of this festival. So cool.
Well, mostly it's fun. I mean, it better be fun, right? It's a lot of work, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
These things the biggest ones are really huge, but it is a lot of fun. I mean, people come to celebrate this crazy season. They celebrate all these wonderful names and the history associated with them, and we have a good time. So that is the bottom line. If it's not fun, we're not going to do it anymore. So we're having fun.
That is so cool. So I do have some tomato troubleshooting questions that maybe you can help me with.
Let's see what we can do.
So last summer, I got a lot of wind, and I know that I did some ties and stakes with my tomatoes, but it just wasn't quite enough. Like, I'm talking a lot of wind, yeah.
And they got really damaged then, right?
Yeah, they did. And like for the sun golds, they flew off.
Right, sun the tomatoes did.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, here's my first suggestion: find a different place to grow. And I know that can be a little tough sometimes if you have limited space. But we talk about all the time. We talk about breeze is good, wind is not. Mm. And whether it's you're at the coast and you're putting up a windbreak, which some people do. We often talk about, the place the tomatoes want to be are behind the hedge, behind the fence, next to the house, rather than out in the open. So you've identified, and I think need to work hard at just sort of, what the problem is, in other words. Let's see if we can't block it somehow or otherwise make a difference. The other thing, truly, is that maybe the stature of the tomato can help you out. In other words, there are larger tomatoes and smaller, generally called out on a tag as a determinate or an indeterminate tomato. Determinate is smaller. It's stockier.
Mm-hmm.
It may hold up better in a windy situation. So, again, strategy. Get to a strategy and then do what you can physically to limit the problem.
All right. Better strategy. But I do find that a lot of people maybe underestimate how much support the plants actually need.
You're not wrong about that.
Mm-hmm.
You're not wrong about that. We've just introduced a new tomato trellis to the market, and we think it's the strongest thing around. And it's basically a grid that's in an X shape. And I love growing tomatoes on grids because it spreads out the tomato in kind of in a planar fashion. But it's also a really sturdy support. A lot of times, though, Kathy, when people talk about I can't manage all this growth, and oh my gosh. My first question is, how much are you fertilizing and how much are you watering? Because if you truly have a problem with a 10-foot plant, you may be doing too much of both of those, and you may alleviate the problem and have better tomatoes if you limit that a little bit. So back to the basics. It's always back to the basics. We went out last year in doing tests for our new cage, and I didn't have a tomato that was over 5.5 feet tall. And that's because I kind of have a tough love field. I don't overdo it. And maybe that's part of the problem.
Does that make like...
Yes, you got to be ready with a support. Yes,
sorry. Do you think that made for better quality tomatoes in the end?
Well, here's the thing. If you're overwatering your tomato, at the beginning of the season, the tomato's got only stems and leaves and, structure
stems,
to support.
Yeah.
At the end of the season, the tomato's putting all its energy into fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So consequently, you're giving it energy partially through water. If you're flooding your tomato at the end of the season, which we often do because it doesn't look so good, the plant doesn't look so great at the end. You're really just flooding that fruit with water, and you're affecting the taste of the tomato. The less water you give it, water deeply and infrequently when you water, then all those sugars and acids have time to balance in fruit, and you won't dilute flavor. So yes, water has everything to do with how that tomato tastes in the end. All your good farmers market growers are cutting back on the water at the end of the season, so that all that sweetness is found in the fruit.
Oh, so it's okay if the plants look really raggedy and dry at the end, because it makes for better fruit.
Did you read the Miss America syndrome of the book?
I talk about it.
I said, look, we all want to be good gardeners and have perfect green, perky plants all season long. That is not going to happen, at least not if you're doing it right. So I call it the Miss America syndrome. Let it go. You got to, you know, there's another theme. You got to be able to go, I want fruit. I don't care what the plant looks like, and be okay with that and not try to fix it all season. So slow and steady, you know, know what you're doing in terms of the basics, but don't be freaked out when things start, literally, the plant starts to go south. It's just providing you fruit. That's part of the arc that it goes through as it grows.
All right. Well, I think I can get down with that. Thank you.
A lot of people can. Granted, there are problems that appear that, you know, I mean, there are plagues and problems that will hurt a tomato and, you know, stop it from producing altogether. But just the season and the length of the season is not one. You know, it will, again, there's this definite arc that the plant goes through, and it's ready for the compost pile at the end of the season, and basically a lot of them look like it. So that's how that goes. A note there, if your tomato has any disease, you don't want to be putting it in the compost pile. But figuratively speaking, it looks ready for the compost pile.
Well, this is good to know. All right, so this book also talks about not only how to grow the tomatoes, but what to do with them afterwards. Of course, my favorite part.
That's the different part in this book, right? It's like everybody's been asking, where are the recipes, and here they are.
And I love how you describe your favorite recipe, which is what, cut, salt, eat.
pretty much that's the end of it. Just involve salt, which is, again, we're trying to make things easy in this book, right?
Mm-hmm.
And accessible, and hopefully it does that.
Well, I know a lot of people who find that there's no better use of a really good ripe tomato than just to eat it fresh. I mean, anything else is
that is what you're growing it for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sure, we love sauce. We love great recipes. Tomatoes are amazing in so many different things. We want to grow tomatoes in our backyard so we can stuff our face in one, you know, when it's perfectly ripe. That's what most of us want. And hopefully you'll get that, right? That is what we want. Simple is often best.
Speaking of stuff your face, I enjoyed this. You wrote about an interesting comment from the community that you got, a sort of request from somebody who wanted a tomato that he could eat whilst driving his car. Eat by hand.
Exactly. Yeah.
Did you figure that one out?
Yeah, it's like, what's that about? I told him, I said, hey, drive safely, but maybe you should opt for one called Blush.
Blush
is a new sort of elongated grape that's beautiful. It's golden with sort of pink splashes inside and out. And it's super sweet and it's amazing. So I decided not to just do the pop a cherry in your mouth thing.
Yeah.
I just kind of went, let's do this with a little larger tomato. And I recommended Blush. So I hope he was happy.
All right. The Blush. So it's more of like a plum shaped or oval.
It's cylindrical. It's like a long grape with a little point on the end often. The product of a guy named Fred Hempel, a wonderful hybridizer like Brad, who is coming up with great things for the market. So it's a good one. And there's a whole series of those stripes. Look for the artisan tomatoes, and that you'll find work that he's doing out there.
Cool. Well, maybe we'll see more people eating tomatoes on the go like it's an apple. Thanks to that one.
Well, I assure you, plenty of people do. I get those emails too, right? Like, what did you take to work today? Well, one of my tomatoes, of course.
Why
or
not?
Three, so I could share. So we get that all the time.
I love it. Another great piece of advice I enjoyed in this book was to use tomato water. So that stuff that kind of like juices out from
that messy stuff that's left over, right?
Right.
Well, look, you can use it in a cocktail. You can use it with stocks. You can use it in anything that you want a little extra summer, hit from. And I did a really interesting thing recently. I froze whole tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was thawing them, I just kind of punctured the lower sections and sitting it in a saucer. And there it is, frozen tomato.
Uh-huh.
And as it sort of thawed, this tomato water just oozes out wonderfully. And you have this perfectly clear tomato water at the bottom of the saucer. I went, oh, well, that's a good way to capture that stuff if it's not on a cutting board.
Hey.
And yeah, it's kind of an obscure part of the tomato, I guess, recipe array, but it certainly works and is interesting. And foodies and your foodie audience and chefs out there, they know what tomato water is.
Yeah.
And bartenders, I should say, as well. So there you go.
It sounds so refreshing. A cup of tomato water instead of, like, you know, canned tomato juice. That's a 9-day difference.
Well,
but yeah,
interesting. A lot of people go, I don't know about that. But as an added ingredient, it's really great.
I love the idea.
And it's part of what you taste. I mean, let's be honest. It's part of what we love about tomato taste. That juice that runs down your chin, hello, that's partially tomato water.
And it has that fresh taste, too, which I love. All right. It looks like that's about all the time we have today. But thank you so much for chatting with us, Scott. And
well, I'm happy to be here, of course. And hey, hang in there, New York, and everywhere else where it's cold. Your tomato season is coming.
Yes. Hopefully in a more colorful way than ever. All right.
Exactly. You'll appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Everyone check out Tomato Mania. And we'll see you next week on Eat Your Words. The theme song for Eat Your Words is Lovin' Like This by the California Honeydrops.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.